My concern is that it's a decision based on fear rather than on science.
Alaskans react to Obama's decision to call off Shell's Arctic drilling. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 27th of May. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the state calls in more resources to fight the rapidly multiplying wildfires in the interior.
Two CL 215s from Canada and a Convair 580 also from Canada. We're getting another air tanker plus 10 more smoke jumpers.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And by the Center for Distance Education at University of Alaska Fairbanks, offering access to online courses from anywhere. Summer semester starts May 24th. Information at distance.uaf.edu.
President Obama has put offshore drilling in the Arctic on hold. He announced his decision at a White House press conference today.
We will suspend the planned exploration of two locations off the coast of Alaska.
The move blocks Shell from its plans to drill exploratory wells in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas this summer. The moratorium is expected to last until next year. The president says the step is necessary in light of last month's oil drilling rig disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. Obama's decisions were prompted by a report delivered to the White House today by Interior Secretary Ken Salazar, outlining the safety and environmental issues of offshore drilling. Salazar says postponing the Arctic plans will allow a presidential commission to weigh in on whether drilling can go forward there safely or not. As APRN's Libby Casey reports from Washington, Alaska's congressional delegation reacted with disappointment to the news.
The delegation is unified in its expressions of dismay at the decision. Senator Mark Begich says while the Gulf accident should mean stronger oversight, Shell has made an effective case for safe exploration this summer.
It just means we're going to have more delay, a loss of potential jobs in Alaska now and in the future. It keeps us still buying oil from foreign countries that are not our friends. It doesn't get us on a pathway of a long-term comprehensive energy plan that includes, and we're at some point we're going to be readdressing this issue, we're going to have OCS as part of our equation. I'm hopeful this is not a stop that says stop now and stop forever.
Begich says he'll work within the Democratic Party and the White House to ensure drilling does eventually happen.
If it's a pause, we'll work through this, but I'm disappointed because honestly, we've had so many delays already and have met hurdles that I think most states have never had to reach as we have. You know, I mean, we're kind of a casualty of the BP disaster.
Alaska Republican Congressman Don Young says he's concerned Shell might walk if the permits don't move forward. And then he says the state will eventually face a trans-Alaska pipeline without enough oil.
That puts Shell in a big box because of the investment. And I did talk to the secretary today. And I expressed my dissatisfaction and very calmly. He said I thought it was inappropriate. And he tried to say, and I take his word, that this is a pause button. And because of the hysteria of the spill in the Gulf, that there had to be something done. And I'm not blaming Obama about the spill. I'm one of the few people that doesn't blame the administration. I don't think the finger pointing is occurring under this situation is not beneficial to anyone. We should learn from it.
Senator Lisa Murkowski agrees that this is a moment to learn. She says despite her confidence in Shell's plans, her trip this week to see the devastation in the Gulf of Mexico showed her that everything should be done to protect against oil disasters. She says this waiting time should be used to beef up safety and environmental plans.
It is a in-your-face reminder of the risks that are inherent with resource development, oil and gas extraction. And I want to make sure that whether it's Shell moving forward offshore or any other entity moving offshore Alaska or down in the Gulf, I want to make sure that to the extent possible those risks have been reduced. And I think we're going to learn a lot from what is coming out of the Gulf now.
Murkowski says, for example, she sees the need for preparedness, like having more booms on hand and having oil dispersants that are pre-authorized. Despite her interest in improving safety measures, the senior senator does want to see the Obama administration allow the Arctic leases to go forward. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Shell says it respects today's decision, but that doesn't mean the company isn't disappointed. Vice President of Shell Alaska Pete Slaby says the company's plans in Alaska had already been subject to an unprecedented review.
It's terribly frustrating. We were really very, very confident of where we were on this, and I think we have a very solid program. So, of course, it remains frustrating after 4 years of working through some of these details.
The company was planning to start exploratory drilling in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas as early as July, and Slaby says a lot of resources had already been mobilized to make that happen.
We have spent tens of millions of dollars on this already, and we have vessels in place and on their way up. And, with respect to jobs, we had, originally hoped for about 800 jobs here in Alaska this summer, and there'll be a significant amount of reduction on that. So I would imagine just a fraction of that moving forward.
Slaby says the company doesn't have a clear understanding of what it needs to do to begin drilling in 2011, but he says Shell is committed to pushing forward with its plan in Alaska. Alaskan communities closest to the proposed drilling are praising today's decision. The native village of Point Hope has been one of the most vocal opponents of Shell's plan and has sued to stop the company's exploration work. They've argued that an oil spill in the remote waters of the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas would be far harder to clean up than in the Gulf of Mexico. Caroline Cannon is president of the native village of Point Hope. She's overjoyed by the decision, but wishes it didn't have to come as a result of the disaster in the Gulf.
My heart goes out to the people. It brings tears to my eyes. You know, it could have been us. It could have been our people that would have been impacted.
Environmental groups are also welcoming the news. Cindy Shogun, the executive director of the Alaska Wilderness League, says her group wasn't sure how the administration would weigh in on the Arctic plans, especially with so much focus on stopping the spill in the Gulf of Mexico and making decisions about deep water drilling there.
I just didn't know if the administration was really paying any attention with all the obvious attention that's directed at the Gulf, if they were even thinking about what they had scheduled or planned for the Arctic Ocean this summer. So I just didn't know, and I was very relieved when I heard the news.
A team of scientists said today the Gulf's oil spill had surpassed the Exxon Valdez disaster as the worst in U.S. history. Caleb Pengawi from Kotzebue is rural liaison for the environmental group Oceana. He calls the decision to keep Shell out of the Arctic a total relief.
I think that we were anticipating or dreading that Shell was going to drill in the Chukchi Sea and Beaufort Sea this summer. And definitely felt that there wasn't enough safeguards to protect us from if there was an accident or something happened that would have an oil spill.
Pengawi says he and other opponents need to use the moratorium to do an even better job making the case against Arctic drilling. Governor Sean Parnell saw the federal decision to hold off on Shell's Arctic Ocean drilling permits as part of a larger pattern of federal actions that are costing Alaska jobs. He said the state is looking at its legal options. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
The governor's frustration was clear as he spoke with reporters after a bill signing in Anchorage. He questioned the Obama administration's basis for not awarding the permits for this year.
My concern is that it's a decision based on fear rather than on science.
Parnell said Shell's permits withstood a thorough permitting process, plus court tests. And the water they want to drill in is hundreds, not thousands of feet deep. He said he'll use the bully pulpit to cry foul and he'll examine the state's legal options. At a minimum, he says, Shell should get a year's extension added to its permits.
I'm urging our congressional delegation to step in with the federal government, make sure that Shell's leases are extended for the length of this moratorium so they don't get cut off from doing it, make sure that they can continue getting their permits for further work. I mean, so there's still things we can do. It's just an extremely frustrating time, though.
Parnell said the Obama administration's policy changes are costing Alaska jobs on a number of fronts, citing the reversal of the permit for drilling in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, the zoning of the oceans, and the new management scheme for the Tongass National Forest.
They're killing Alaska jobs, and so we're looking at every option we can to fight that effort.
Governor Parnell said the federal actions were impeding Alaska's economic growth and denying the nation energy. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, finding shelter for homeless families in the winter.
The churches were actually stepping up and saying, we want to be part of the solution. We would love to be able to act as temporary cold weather shelters for families.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Evacuation orders were issued last night for the village of Tanacross and a nearby subdivision of Tok due to a fast-moving wildfire that's closed a stretch of the Alaska Highway. Dave Stancliffe with Tok Forestry says the fire, suspected to be lightning-caused and initially reported at 5 p.m. yesterday, quickly grew from 5 acres to 2,000 acres in just a few hours.
This fire, because of wind, was driven fairly quickly, and the community of Tanacross was not directly in its path, but close enough so that they did evacuate Tanacross. Some people spent the night at the school. Others spent their time here with relatives and friends in Tok.
Stancliffe says about 15 residents in the Eagle subdivision, about 10 miles from Tok, are also threatened by the fire and were asked to evacuate. He says crews focused on structure protection are being aided by air support and bulldozers cutting protective lines through the mixed black spruce and aspen forest.
6 dozers on the fire, and it's very compatible terrain for dozers. Dozers can work quickly. They've been putting in line and working all night.
Stancliffe says flames jumped the Alaska Highway last night, starting a 20-acre spot fire, but activity has slowed this morning.
The fire's laid down a little bit. It's cool, but we're expecting more high temperatures today. The conditions are going to be extreme again, and possibly some dry lightning.
An incident management team is taking over control of the fire response today. The Alaska Highway remains closed from Cathedral Bluffs, 26 miles, to Tok. State and federal firefighting agencies are ramping up the response as the wildfire situation intensifies across the interior. There were 20 new wildfires yesterday. The Division of Forestry's Maggie Rogers says resources are arriving from outside.
2 CL-215s from Canada and a Convair 580, also from Canada. We're getting another P-3 air tanker, which will be a second P-3 that we'll have here in Alaska, and that's coming from the lower 48. And we're also bringing up additional helicopters and a jump ship, plus 10 more smoke jumpers, which will make for a total of 40 additional smoke jumpers that have been brought into the mix.
The interior forecast is for continued hot, dry weather with thunderstorms, conditions that are expected to result in new fire starts. An environmental group based in Haines is taking steps to bring the state's new cruise ship wastewater discharge rules to court. From member station KHNS, Tara Bicknell reports from Haines.
The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation released the rule changes late last month, requiring cruise ships to meet different limits for specific types of wastewater treatment systems currently on board. Gershon Cohen is with the Campaign to Safeguard America's Waters. He says the changes violate a 2009 bill that gave cruise ships more time to comply with wastewater treatment regulations and required onboard installment of best available technology.
Unfortunately, DEC's permit that came out in draft form back in March that we commented on and now has come out in final form just a few weeks before the cruise ships started coming back in May, ignored half of the law. The permit gives them more time to meet the state water quality standards at point of discharge, but does nothing to require them to use the best technologies that are available. And that's just straight out of the statute, and they're violating that, and we're going to sue the state if necessary to enforce the law.
Cohen's group requested an administrative appeal of the new permit late last week. That move is the first step in a legal process that could challenge the permit in court. The department says the new permit soundly reflects the legislature's decision, as well as wide-ranging public comments from businesses, the cruise industry, and environmental organizations. Lynn Kent is the director of the department's water division.
It requires use of advanced wastewater treatment systems that, as a class, represent the best available technology, which is what the law required. We also believe that the final permit that we issued is protective of water quality, both while the ships are underway, where there's tremendous dilution, and it also protects water quality while the ships are in port and stationary, where even more stringent rules apply.
Alaska Cruise Association President John Binkley says the industry isn't reacting at this point. He says the trade was pleased with the new rules and appreciates the department considering concerns raised during the public comment period.
DEC has issued the permits, and so the ships have permits, and they're complying with those permits. And then there's, you know, from our perspective, that just everything stays the same unless DEC comes back and says we're going to change the permits.
The Campaign to Safeguard America's Waters says there are wastewater treatment systems already in sparse use that meet the terms in the permit's first draft. The group says that technology should be installed on other ships. But DEC's Kent says that technology needs more time to prove itself.
What we don't have available yet is the ability to size and design and construct those on cruise vessels. So we feel pretty strongly that the advanced systems that they have on board the vessels right now do represent the best available technology, and the permit was designed for those systems that are currently on board.
Cohen says the permit change is the latest in a series of questionable moves by the state. He says it started with his own removal from a science panel to study wastewater technology after the tourism industry expressed concern about Cohen as a choice. He noted it continued with the passenger head tax reduction.
It is disconcerting, to say the least, that the Parnell administration has now, for the third time in almost as many months, taken a direction that seems to go directly contrary to the will of Alaskans.
The new permit took effect with the first cruise ship of this season and requires vessels to monitor their own discharge monthly through a third party. It relaxes discharge limits for ammonia, copper, nickel, and zinc compared to the earlier version, which ships had a difficult time meeting. In Haines, I'm Tara Bicknell.
Nome's recent recall election of all five school board members has city workers and attorneys looking up ordinances. Results from Tuesday's vote showed two members were recalled, but that may change after a hand recount tomorrow. KNOM's Lorelei Kanin has the story.
The Nome School Board recall election stems from an executive session that occurred back in January. Upon the executive session, the school board voted 3-2 to not renew the contracts of the Nome Belt's principal and assistant principal. Recall petitioners say the executive session was illegal. On Tuesday, Nome voters went to the polls, and today, the Nome City Council was presented with the election results. The results show two board members were recalled, Albert McComas and Heather Payena. Both elections were close ones. Timber's recall election was tied. Payena was recalled by 6 votes. Nome citizen Joe Kennedy requested a hand count of Timber's election. Upon Kennedy's request, Nome citizen Louis Green Jr. requested a hand count of Payena's election. Nome Mayor Denise Michaels says the recall process is new for the council and for the election board.
Our ordinances have never addressed a recall, and so we're having to depend on council and the state law, and we need that information to make sure that it's very transparent, it's very clear, and that it's fair.
Tuesday's election had a 40% voter turnout. Signs supporting the school board and signs wanting the recall were seen throughout the Gold Rush city. The manual count going on tomorrow will prove every vote counts. Again, Nome Mayor Denise Michaels.
You know, it's good that this public participation is here because it's very evident, it's very important. The results are very important. The outcome is very important.
The results of tomorrow's hand count will return to the City Council for certification. Once the election is final, the remaining board members will begin soliciting applications or nominations for citizens interested in serving in the Nome School Board. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kinnean.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. In Alaska, more than 2,000 children are in need of foster homes, and more than 1,200 of those children are Alaska Native. These children need homes where they can learn who they are. Alaska Native foster homes can help pass on traditions, arts, and culture. Help keep Alaska's children safe and their heritage strong. Learn more at 800-478-7307. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The operator of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System is hopeful that the flow of oil could resume as early as this evening after the 800-mile line was shut down this week due to a contained spill. Operator Alyeska Pipeline Service Company reported significant progress since yesterday, with power restored to a pump station, crews draining oil from a storage tank that overflowed, and cleanup and oil recovery underway. Spokeswoman Michelle Egan said there had been no hiccups or interruptions in those efforts as of late this afternoon, putting the company on track to restart the line before storage facilities fill up. Much of the attention on Anchorage's homeless has focused lately on unauthorized squatter camps and chronic inebriates. But Tuesday night, an ordinance was introduced to the Anchorage Assembly that could offer life-saving shelter to homeless families during the winter months. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
The chronic inebriates living in camps and panhandling on street corners are easily the most visible of Anchorage's homeless. But they're a minority of the much larger total number of those without a residence of their own. Most are people who have simply fallen on hard times. Many are families. The municipality's Department of Health and Human Services analysis of homelessness in 2009 shows January with a total of 240 families seeking shelter. The same graph indicates 25 of them were unsuccessful. This week, Mayor Dan Sullivan's administration introduced an ordinance enacting a cold weather plan for homeless persons, in particular, families. Daryl Hess, homeless coordinator for the Municipal Department of Health and Human Services, says the plan arose from Anchorage's faith-based community.
The churches were actually stepping up and saying, we want to be part of the solution. We would love to be able to act as temporary cold weather shelters for families during the winter and help alleviate some of the burden on the providers.
So why do the churches need an ordinance to provide shelter to homeless families? Hess says it's a matter of city code.
Currently, even to act as a temporary cold weather shelter for families, a church would have to go through the conditional use permit process, which takes time, and it's $30,000 to $40,000.
That amount could thwart the participation of even the most enthusiastic congregation. Hess says the proposed ordinance has less onerous but still important requirements.
We're going to have a one-page application, basically, that a church would fill out and say, we want to act as a shelter. We want to make sure that they have insurance, that the fire department says they're okay, this is their capacity, get some basic training for the volunteers. But we don't just want every church in Anchorage doing this. We want it coordinated.
Hess envisions a central clearinghouse of sorts that would have a constantly updated list of which churches had suitable space for families needing immediate temporary shelter during Anchorage's coldest nights. As to what constitutes cold weather?
When I originally looked at this, I thought 15 degrees when I was looking at the plan, and then the churches came back to me and to the municipality, and the faith-based community said, well, people get awful cold at 20 degrees. Why 15? Why can't we do 32 degrees? Because 32 degrees and below is freezing.
Hess says the original 15 degrees activation temperature will likely be changed to 32 degrees when the Assembly takes up the ordinance at its June 8th meeting. The Assembly discussion and likely vote is set to immediately follow a public hearing on the proposed cold weather family shelter plan. At Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
A Fairbanks woman has been arrested on an accusation she helped a wanted man avoid police. Shannon Keel has been charged with first-degree hindering prosecution. According to court documents, the 22-year-old woman picked up Sean Jeffers after the March 16th shooting of Brian Richardson outside a bar in Goldstream Valley. Keel allegedly rented a pair of hotel rooms to help the murder suspect hide from law enforcement. Jeffers ended up turning himself in on March 20th. The Tanana Valley Clinic is donating exam beds to a new hospital in earthquake-ravaged Haiti. TVC is replacing the exam tables with updated models, and clinic spokeswoman Anita Atchison says staff wanted to find a place for the still viable equipment.
We didn't like the idea of simply putting them into a landfill. We also thought that they surely had some use left in them. And one of our medical providers, Dr. Sigonis, her daughter is affiliated with a group called Alaska Medical Missions. And, well, let's contact these folks down in Anchorage and see if we can't get them to somewhere where they're really in need.
Atchison says Linden Transport subsidiary Alaska West Express offered to ship the 17 exam beds to Anchorage-based nonprofit group Alaska Medical Missions, which is preparing a container of equipment and supplies for a new hospital going up near Port-au-Prince, Haiti. Alaska Medical Missions Director Brandon Tatum says the group is committed to continued support of Haiti's earthquake recovery.
It seems as though everybody from celebrities to the common person jumps on a bandwagon when a big disaster happens, but usually 30 days afterwards it kind of drifts out of the public news while the Haitians are still struggling.
Tatum says the best 9 of the 17 beds donated by TVC will be serviced and packaged for the long trip to Haiti. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Tara Bicknell in Haines, Lorelei Kanine in Nome, and Len Anderson in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. Alaska's first pioneer home opened in Sitka in 1913. Continuing the tradition of loving care, 5 more pioneer homes opened over the years, including a veterans home in Palmer. If you are 65 years or older, need assisted living, and an Alaska resident for the past year, you can apply to live in a pioneer home. Information at 888-355-3117 or at the State of Alaska DHSS website. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.